Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I am Joseph Scrimshaw.
I am Ken Napsok.
And this is the Mandalorian Report. I always feel like that noise should be there. It's exactly what I'm just saying. Yeah. You just did it. It's great.
It's where it's synced. We feel it, yes.
That's the Mandalorian playing keyboard. That's exactly what's happening right there.
Yeah.
Maybe Baby Yoda with the Force. Anyway, it's great to be here in a place where I feel free to say Baby Yoda, because I'm still trying to contain myself a little bit on the internet. Absolute yep. Fool's errand. Very silly.
It's very, very silly. Man, even on other shows, not even Star Wars related shows, it comes up, and I kind of have that moment of like, but maybe our UK friend. Okay.
Nope. They all know, or they are pirates, or yes. Both. And anyway, we are going to get into chapter 5 of The Mandalorian called The Gunslinger. So just right off the bat, I want to talk about the title. We've taken a journey across the stars in these titles, The Stars of Meaning.
Yes.
What do you think The Gunslinger means?
You know what's funny is you know, the title pops up and I was like, oh, this is kind of what the show was supposed to be about. Like, not like in the negative sense, but just like we got promised.
Right. The Mandalorian was going to be a lone gunslinger making his way across the galaxy.
So you could apply it to him. You could apply it to this Toro chap. Not a good gunslinger, but a gunslinger. Ming-Na Wen, she's slinging a gun for sure.
The rifle slinger.
Rifle slinger. I, though, in the end, think the gunslinger might actually be the footprint feet, jingle-jangling feet walking up at the end.
It was certainly the jingle of a gunslinger.
Yes.
The booted gunslinger. The jangly gunslinger. I feel like it was, for me, I chose to interpret it as it is about the idea of what is a gunslinger.
Yeah.
We'll get into this, but one of the things that I really liked about the episode is that contrast between Toro and Fennec and the Mandalorian in seeing how he didn't quite feel comfortable in the boots of a gunslinger anymore.
Right.
That he wasn't really a gunslinger, or that kind of idea of the legend of the gunslinger. Mm. And there's a lot in this episode that I really liked about the idea of being legendary. But that's kind of how I took it. It's sort of like this idea of the gunslinger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the kid wants to be. It's what Mando still is.
Yeah.
But is it what he wants to be?
Yeah, no, that starts to come through a little half step behind on some things. Not that he's an old retired player, but just like Fennec was kind of getting the angle on him there a little bit. There's a lot of
or was she?
A lot of uncertainty out of the Mando at times. You know, where I feel a lot of times he kind of is in control, or at least knows. Especially go back to the opening sequence of the show, with the cold open to start this all, and hear him like, "I'm not sure if that's our target. I'm not sure what's going on." So a lot of questions, fun, and I really like your idea there, determination. The Toro, I love the opening pose of him in Han's seat pose chair.
Yeah.
Harkening back to, that's the smuggler, but remember, even that smuggler wasn't sure of who he was deep down inside.
Yeah.
So all that does work for me.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, let's dive in then to big overall reactions, the basics. Did we like it? And then we'll get into all the details.
All right, here we go. This episode has been a conversation starter.
The conversation slinger.
I'm not a huge fan of the episode, but then again, it's very, very easy to talk about this episode because a lot of things I love in it. So I've had a lot of conversations this week. We had the big live schmodown, so there's a lot of folks asking that question. You know?
Oh yeah, did you like it?
I gotta get your thoughts. And I say, tune into Force Center for the full thoughts. But my initial reaction is, there's, again, like episode four, though episode four I thought was much, much better. This one had some real world things in it outside of the story that I just did not like. And that's okay.
Okay.
I did not like some of the acting choices made by Jake Cannavale. I didn't like some of the directing and dialogue by Dave Filoni. Even after three rewatches, I'm still there.
Okay.
And we preach a lot about, hey, watch again. Hey, take a point, dig deep. So it's been a sticking point for me. And I just, have to be honest about that. But then it's a lesson, not a lesson, but like what we do here at Force Center is take the time. And man, there's a lot of things about the Tusken Raiders and things I can go into, and the return to Mos Eisley, which, by the way, I really love. That's not a stretch.
Right.
It's not a stretch, and I think it's okay to go, I didn't like this, but there's some things in here that really add to this story.
Yeah, yeah. I think what we discuss on Force Center is we are fine being negative about something. We just want to be negative in a positive way. positive negativity here at Force Center. But you know what I mean, of just the idea of it is okay for us to say, we absolutely love Star Wars. That one line didn't work for me.
Yeah.
The dad joke in Darth Vader, from Dad Vader in Rogue One. That will never be my favorite line, and I understand other fans disagree, and that's fine. But it's okay to just say it that way instead of starting an entire Twitter account fighting against the lines you don't like. And that's what we don't want to do. So, so my big picture reaction is there were one or two beats that are like, I'm not sure if that's ever going to be my favorite, but that's not a big deal for me. I think the big tension of this episode for me is there was far more I liked than didn't. In some stuff I absolutely loved, like the Tusken Raiders we'll talk about. But I think it is suffering from an ambiguity of what the show is. as we reach chapter five. So this show starts with all of the buildup of it's a lone gunslinger. So you're going into it going, maybe it's going to be a little bit of episode of the week. This is action figures. We're just playing with them. And this is Amanda going and having cool Star Wars action and cool Star Wars places. But then immediately this really compelling story emerges of who is the Mandalorian? What is his relationship with Baby Yoda? What are the creepy Imperials and possibly a Kamino cloner doing with the baby? And now we've had two episodes in a row that feel a little bit more episode of the week.
Yeah.
So there's this tension of like, well, is this relationship with Baby Yoda and that story setting up the Mando and Baby Yoda to have a couple of adventures of the week? And are we going to come back to the main story? Or are we just kind of missing the main story?
Yeah.
Now, that's my reaction to it as it plays out. My guess and hope is that some of the things that we learned about Mando and about the state of the galaxy are going to be really, really crucial. Yeah. And Fennec Shand and whoever the boots are.
Right, right.
And all those things are going to be crucial. And we're going to look back at this and go, wow, it felt like an episode of the week that wasn't driving the overall plot forward.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, if you didn't know this about Mando's rocky relationship with what it means to be a bounty hunter, if you didn't get to see how the crime syndicate's collapsing changed the face of even Outer Rim places like Tatooine.
Yeah.
If you didn't know that Mando and Fennec Shand kind of knew of one another and respected one another, then the rest of what's coming won't land as well.
Great point. And this takes us to a thing I'd love to really dive in with you is this term filler, which gets thrown around a lot. And Andres Cabrera and I had a good conversation over on Collider about that word filler. And I don't like the word filler at all. I understand where that comes up, right? But and sometimes I'm like, that's the only word some of us might have to describe what we feel about the episode.
Yeah.
And he, Andres, a big anime fan, says that, you know, hey, the word kind of really kind of comes out of that world because they had to fill episodes between animation. A great conversation there. But we both kind of agreed, and I think I definitely want to pull you into this train of thought and conversation of every one of these quieter episodes, we're supposed to learn something new. And even though it is, I called it Love Boat almost, like guest star of the week kind of thing.
It's definitely getting there.
He's definitely getting there. What can we learn? At the time of that review, I was like, I don't fully know what that answer is, what I learned about Mando. But by the end of that, and now carrying it into here, which is why this is where I really love discussing the show more than any place, is to take the time of like, I'm like, oh, you know what? I learned some things about Mando, his relationship to the idea of being a father.
Yep.
I learned this. And I was like, okay, there's a lot there that this will hopefully tie back to this episode, some things, some themes. And yeah, that's my monologue on the word filler. And I'm sure you are in the same ballpark with us. You just kind of set that up too.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's filler has a little bit of a negative connotation.
Right.
Like, you know, there's important stuff going on, but you just had to sell some more commercials and you pumped this out. Right.
Right.
But episode of the week used to be how the vast majority of American television storytelling existed. And I remember my first experiences with longer form was like Deep Space Nine really getting away. Mm. Like maybe different shows would have kind of a longer arc.
Yeah.
But like Deep Space Nine was one of the first shows like, screw it. What really matters is this long-term storytelling.
Right.
And American television has really evolved to be about that. And all of our cultural consumption has evolved to be about that, where people are going to see Ant-Man and the Wasp because they know that there's something in there that will be vital to the next big Avengers movie. And, you know, there's a criticism we heard a lot of, like, is Solo necessary to the story? So we've had this huge cultural shift where episode a week used to be like, you know, you'd sit down in the 90s to watch The X-Files and people would go, oh, is it a Mythos episode where they continue the big story? Or is it a Monster of the Week?
Yeah.
And those were distinctions, not value judgments.
That was the way.
Yeah, that was the way. And I think there is a little bit of a value judgment. And I think this one is sitting in the middle of like, is it honestly episode of the week? Was the episode before episode of the week?
Yeah.
Or is there stuff in here that is going to be absolutely vital to the overall story of season one of The Mandalorian?
And episodes four and five are very similar, right? So that in a sense of he gets to a spot, needs some help, gets involved, helps somebody or kind of helps somebody, you know. So that to me made it seem even more like, we've already been here. But you're very right. Deep Space Nine is kind of the first one that was like the show.
I mean, along with X-Files, but X-Files really did a different spin on it. And Next Generation had some continuing storytelling, but it still had a real like, no, this is the way of American television. You have to tune in having never seen an episode and be able to be caught up in a previously on.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's, I don't want to say spoiled, but there's this kind of almost weird expectation now that everything must be very clear in the next chapter. Even Game of Thrones got that. That episode was filler. It's like, give it a second.
Yes. I think the emotional needs and perspectives of the character is never entirely clear. Like for me, I think it is potentially vital that chapter 4 and chapter 5, which I think people can both see as episode of the week, are, to me, mirror images of one another.
Yeah.
In episode 4, the Mandalorian kind of gets lauded for being a father with a good bond with his baby who wants to watch over him. He gets to use his skills to do something noble and save good people who are just trying to get by. In chapter 5, he's just on the run and he has to attempt to go back to his sort of villainous bounty hunter ways that he feels morally dubious about in what is coded to us, the audience, is the original wretched hive of scum and villainy, and plunge back into that world of capturing someone that he clearly kind of admires and, you know,
fears.
Has certainly has respect for, sees this kid who wants nothing but to capture and kill to prove himself.
Mm-hmm.
Also just finds out, I can't go, even if I wanted to do this morally, I can't go back because, in fact, the entire guild wants to kill me and there are a million people hoping to be legends by killing me.
Right.
And on top of that, I don't know where to put a baby. I left a baby in a hot spaceship. I'm a terrible father, and that gets called out by Moto.
Yeah.
I would keep wanting to say Molo after John Molo, the costume designer of the original trilogy. I think there is this strong contrast in developing his view of himself as a hunter and as a parent.
Yeah. So, and there you go. So right now we already got some themes that are perhaps moving this more forward than the love boat construct of storytelling they've got going on.
Yes, yes. So. I don't think you learned that much about love boat characters, but it's been a long time, so who knows? Let's move into some sort of things that we liked, some big things, some small things, and then we'll get into some canon stuff and big themes as well. So I know you said that there are some things that you struggled with. Actually, do you want to talk about working through any of those?
Let's do, you know.
Favorite dislikes.
Story-wise, there wasn't. I got to tell you, story-wise, it's similar to the way we kind of talk and celebrate the prequels. The story, the beats, everything is just some of the acting, the chemistry.
The execution.
The dialogue, a lot of those things. And George will, you know, it's supposed to be 1930s acting. It's supposed to be great. Fine with that. That's where this came from me. He's a professional working actor, but Jake Cannavale, I love his father. Oh, great. In every step along the way, it took me out a little bit.
Okay.
And that's, so that can't be, I can't analyze, I'm not going to analyze the story.
Right. So acting, I think, does come down to sometimes taste and also just how it affects us on an emotional level, because it's somebody trying to connect with the audience.
Yeah.
So is it that you just didn't connect with him, you didn't dislike him, or was it literally you were taken out where you felt like that is a human saying lines on a set, not I don't feel immersed in the story?
I should look at it and go, that looks like my YouTube acting. I'll be honest. I was to a weirdly safe place. I was almost weirdly upset at him and the choice to hire him and the choice to put him in there.
Okay,
and the direction of it.
It's safe to say that his performance was not powerful enough to remove from your mind the real world behind it, that this is the son of a well-known actor, probably connected, all that. And you couldn't, because a great actor, from your perspective, mm-hmm. would have erased all of that from your mind.
Would have erased that. And this is, so it would be easy for me to stop off at that cynical bus stop,
yeah.
get off and not enjoy the rest of it. And that's, we've already discussed, there's a lot to address. I think we've addressed it here before, but I think let's, I have found myself, and this is not the way, this is not good. I have found myself really defensive of the films, and Last Jedi in particular, based off this show being used against those. And we talked more about that. So I will admit, this is an admission of guilt. I thought there was some bad directing in this episode at times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but this is the guy you all want to run the thing, Dave right. Filoni. And I was a little like, are we all going to see this? And that's not bad on Dave, because Dave will probably tell you I'm learning. And yeah. I want Dave to learn. And I want Dave to direct in season two. And I want so I have to admit a little step into the dark side from me.
Okay.
I didn't make an angry car video, but just I was kind of like, the dialogue was really bad at times. And that's a writing thing. And also a director, I feel, especially with TV, also a showrunner should keep all the actors in the same show. Like, for case in point, like I first of all, I'm a fan of Amy Sedaris.
Yeah.
And it's also very interesting to be like, do you recognize her as the voice from BoJack, or do you go Strangers with Candy? That's your generation.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
What generation are you in?
I'm a little bit of both. I'm definitely a BoJack. I'm based on Princess Carolyn.
Princess Carolyn.
Yeah, definitely heard Princess Carolyn. I've also I got to do a show with Amy Sedaris several years ago, and she's just so amazing yeah. and kind. And it was the day that I had released the book on just nerd. Yeah. culture essays called Comedy of Doom that I had released, and a friend mentioned that, and she wanted to stop everything in the green room and talk about my little nerd book I had released. So like I am predisposed to love Amy Sedaris because of all of her work, performer, writer, and the behind the scenes of getting to meet her, and her
That's
being
awesome.
Just an awesome person to me.
And she was great. So but my point being, she was great, and sometimes I felt like she was in a holiday special version, which, I mean, I could list the things I loved about the character. And then that Jake Cannavale wasn't. Mando's the Mando. But Ming-Na Wen was great. So, anyways, I'm just saying none of this is necessarily right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying after three viewings, I still was kind of like upset for some reason that I've got to just... I got to rebuild my helmet, destroy and separate myself, because that's just going to cloud my view.
Right. And I think, yeah, ultimately you want to, one wants to the best of their ability to immerse themselves in the fiction, and then you can always retreat later and have the like, well, why did George Lucas make those choices? What do you think was going on set with Dave Filoni? Why was that person cast? But I think ideally we want to be able to disappear into it and have that be a second conversation.
And so that's where I'm at. That's where I am right now.
Totally understandable.
But it doesn't. Yeah. There's so many things I didn't like.
Okay.
Focus determines reality, Joseph, right?
Yes, and let's continue to focus on dislikes for a moment. Because I do want to talk about the Toro thing.
Yeah.
My first viewing, I did feel like there was like, this is, I'm a little, feel tonally swept about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I rewatched it again after seeing that people didn't like his acting performance. And I didn't like the character, but I felt like I wasn't supposed to. I mm-hmm. felt like he was supposed to be bargain basement Han Solo. I think
totally.
It's incredibly on purpose to put him in that same booth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's even like having him have that kind of whiny delivery of, you know, early on, like, but this is my first job. It all felt very on purpose for me. And so it worked for the character. I don't know how I would make different choices from my perspective.
Right.
But I understand that. Tonally taking people out if it didn't work for them. For me, it worked for that character. And I mean, I was happy that he was shot.
Well, that's what I was just going
to say. Because I really disliked the character, and I felt like I was supposed to, because he is this picture of here is somebody who claims they want to be a scoundrel, just like Han Solo, and they actually are.
Yeah.
There isn't anything redeeming or better about them. They are the kind of a-hole you would sit down at a bar and they would just brag because their ship was faster than yours, and they have no more depth than that, and they would kill to get better boots than you so they could brag about that at the bar, and that is not who the Mando is.
Right.
And it doesn't even seem who Fennec Shand is.
Right. One of my favorite moments, though, was him shooting her. And I thought he did play that well. And I thought, yeah, so to your point, like they could have easily done some other version, some other him crying, I'm bad at this and everything. And but he was killed her.
Yeah.
I mean, well, actually, I'll hold that thought. I don't think he killed her, but shot her.
Yeah, I don't think he shot her.
I did like that.
I mean, I don't think he killed her. He clearly shot her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, a lot of that is there for me as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
I'm glad he's dead.
For me, tonally, I think the one thing that bothered me was, and it's not the fault of the music, it is the choice of the director. And this is a growing pet peeve of mine. Mm. I do not need music to tell me when comedy is happening. I can recognize that without kind of funny. I understand tonally sometimes, but I think I think that Amy Sedaris's perfectly funny performance right after she found Baby Yoda,
yeah,
and was trying to decide what to feed him,
yeah,
was undercut a little bit by the music going, it's silly time. And again, not a criticism of the actual execution of the music.
No,
I disagree with the choice to take us in that direction.
Excellent point. Yeah, excellent point. Can I? Yeah, we'll come. I when I say like Amy Sitters seemed sometimes to be in a little different thing, I think that just she did one thing, Toro was doing one thing. But I really, from the design of her hair looking like a 1970s.
Oh, yeah, she mechanic, did look like Ripley, yeah.
Ripley, that's a great example. Everything about it, really happy with that.
Yeah, that
and the
line.
Pit droids, all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, pit droids are up there with one of my favorite things.
Sorry.
Yeah. And I know you have, we will move on to likes in just a moment, but
yeah.
But I do want to follow up on another dislike you said. You said that there was some dialogue that you weren't sure about. Is there a specific example?
It's a Star Wars tradition, right? I didn't like, well, I'll tell you what, I didn't like one line, and it led to my favorite line in the episode, which yeah. I'm just going to, I didn't like the, wait, but I'm not wearing Beskar. And when Mando says,
nope.
That's right. My favorite. So there's this, some clunky, very clunky Star Wars-y lines, which, by the way, is a weird tradition in Star Wars.
Well, I mean, it's this fine line. It is. Yeah. It's built off of adventure serials where people just said in old comic books and that, like, look at it. Look at, you know, people who are like, man, the classic comics of, you know, Chris Claremont's run on Dark Phoenix, you go read some of those.
Yeah.
They just say things that are happening out loud. So, yeah, there is a tradition in this kind of storytelling.
Yeah. So there was some of that where, yes, it was like, that is a do back or, it's not that I didn't like the line. Maybe it was more in his delivery. The way he delivered is like, I'm going to be legendary. Again, there's no part of me that's like, why wasn't this like The Wire? there's no part of me that through the episode just was kind of like bumping around. And then,
I'd love to see a scene where the Mando figures out an entire crime scene by just saying the F word quietly to himself, though, speaking of The Wire.
And even then, I think I was okay with the guy at the beginning, the fighter, the bounty hunter chasing him, doing the, you know, I'll bring you in warm, bring you in cold. That's my line. I was okay with that.
Yeah, that one set me back, I think.
But it wasn't my favorite. And I got to tell you, can I say this? One of my fears coming out of Star Wars Celebration and even before this was, man, we're doing Star Wars live action on TV. I hope it doesn't look like it's on TV.
Yeah.
And that opening space battle to me looked like it was made on an IBM 95. A lot of talented animators. So I'm being a jerk when I say that. But
yeah,
it started me off really wrong.
Okay.
I was like, is this TIE Fighter, the game from 94? and that's where Ken had a bad attitude the rest of the episode.
Fair enough. I understand the darkness seeping in. Yeah, I already gave myself counseling about that. The first line, the warm or cold, that's my line. First, it bothered me because you're just like, I really liked that line when Mando said it.
It's
and
great,
I didn't. This feels the fifth episode of a show feels early to be a little meta about yourself.
That's fair, yeah.
But then when I thought about it, it's never going to be my favorite line, but it does sort of get your head in the right direction for the theme of this is how we saw the Mando at the beginning before he encountered Baby Yoda. Didn't love being a bounty hunter, but it was his job, and he knew a part of it is saying, you know, cool, frightening stuff like that. Of like, and you can see him developing, like, look, when they fight you, say in a really threatening way, I can bring you in warm or I can bring you in cold. And then they shut up and you don't have to fight them. You can see it as like a strategy.
Yeah.
And I see him thinking of it as that is a line. And it starts making you think about like, all right, right away, Mando is being hunted by other bounty hunters who are spewing his tough guy lines at him. And he is really questioning, do I want that to be my line anymore? Is that who I want to be? Which might be me working overtime to counsel myself. But
no, all this stuff works. And Tony, you know, the jetpack, I got to get me one of those lines. Like he's got, it's not a surprise for me to think that he'll say some funny quip to himself. But I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, I take it or leave it. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's get into favorite things then, because I think there's things that we both liked about the episode as well. There's a ton of stuff that I love in this episode. For myself, I really like seeing the pit droids in general, particularly in an episode that was, you know, revisiting kind of the epicenter of Star Wars in the Outer Rim, of classic A New Hope stuff. Yeah. Seeing prequel stuff as well really just makes it feel like we're living in this blended galaxy.
Yes.
And it's an example of beat of humor that worked amazing for me to see the pit droids, who are kind of associated with wacky comedy, kind of pop up and start making their pit droid noises and then immediately be shot at and collapse. Like, that's great comedy to me to on purpose use the contrast of Star Wars can be wacky and Star Wars can be deadly and smash them together for a nice joke, a nice entrance from the Mando. Love that.
Big win with the pit droids.
Yeah. I think my very, very favorite thing, if you want to get into this now, is the Tusken Raiders.
I do. Yeah, that is my, I was going to say, because it's also a canon effect in Revelation, but big win for me.
Yeah. I love that they used the same tactic that they used on Luke in A New Hope. So it makes you realize, well, that's what they do when they see people coming. They park a couple Banthas and get them to stare at those and then sneak up around the other side.
Yeah.
So you see, that's like, that's not a one-off.
Yeah.
That's how they conduct themselves.
They do it.
I think Mando treating them with respect tells us a ton about the Mandalorian. I feel like throughout this episode, he does have some wobbly moments, but he's got a bunch of ideas of like right away of like, here's how we handle this. It's not ideal, but this is what we got.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do things in the honorable way. You can't get her alone. I will help you with that. I just want the money. You can take her, whatever. Keeps trying to be honorable, right? He could just pull his blaster on the mechanic and say, fix it, and he could leave. But that's not who he is.
Right.
And I'm going to negotiate with them. Tells us a ton about the Mandalorian's character. But, of course, more importantly, the Tusken Raiders have always been coded as the literal savages, the word being savages being used in Star Wars as, you know, in conflict with these pioneers.
Right.
There's a real Old West vibe. I think, you know, Luke is pulled from lots of early 20th century storytelling and took some of the baggage with it.
Yeah.
Right. And just to see the classic, their point of view from Star Wars, Attack of the Clones is so brutal that they take Shmi and torture her. And we are not given, at least in the film, any context.
Right.
It's just that they're savages.
Yeah.
And Anakin slaughtered them like savages. So to get their point of view that this is our land, we're the locals, and you're threatening us. It doesn't make it right, but you understand, like, well, why would they grab one of the local farmers?
Yeah.
Is it a way for them to say, stay away from us?
Yeah.
From our perspective, you are encroaching on us and slaughtering us, so we are going to take one of yours to say, back off.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not saying the Tuskens were right, but all of that, giving it that they have a perspective, too, and that if you reached out not with violence, but with empathy, there wouldn't be as much of a problem, potentially.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so great to round out everything that George does love about Star Wars, about a certain point of view, about sociology, and it was just amazing.
I call it like this really, really clear reframing of the Tusken Raiders. And remember, we grew up calling them sand people more than Tusken Raiders.
Yes.
And it's corrected, not correct, but it's reframing inside the story too.
Yes.
It's not just outside. There's a lot of outside reasons to be like, hey, this comes off a little weird or different. But I think in the story, to finally see his other point of view. The Mando's calm, cool, and collected.
Yep.
He's never, oh, they're here. Just kind of like, well, they're going to walk up.
In fact, it's yet another of his great snark lines. Yeah. Like, why don't you tell him yourself?
Yes. And he probably saw them walking up,
by the way. He did.
Love that. It also says a lot about what something we'll come back to of time spent on Mos Eisley or Tatooine. Yeah. It's great. And then just to the sign language, which I just read today, it was an actual deaf performer that was the Tusken Raider.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just again, this big reframing of what we think growing up, of what we, you know, oh, those are the bad guys. They tried to kill Luke and they did bad things to 3PO. And again, not this, you know, it's like watching Ken Burns' documentary in the West. There's a couple that you're like, well, that was wrong. I saw the rest of the episode. We did some things. And I think it's a great, wonderful, real world conversation to pull into Star Wars. And it works so well for me. Just you got right away. Well, they kind of think this is their land, and you're like, if you've paid enough attention to Star Wars, you're like, oh yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah,
and maybe it's the first time you've thought about that. I rank this up here with the Phantom Menace novel of Anakin saving an injured one as the best Tusken Raider moments. And there's also I love them shooting in the pod race. I love a lot about general feel of it. But. I even like, and from a certain point of view, kind of the reference of the Attack of the Clones slaughtering, where they're going, we don't go over that anymore. Some weird space wizard where the sword came by and killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, we know he came from that place. So, yeah, so that's part of the reason that they are aggressive toward that area of town, right?
So it was really interesting to me. And talking about canon revelation, it was a deep... I don't want to say fun, but you know what I mean? Deep, like, oh, this is good. This is interesting.
Yeah.
I liked it. I just liked it being presented.
Yeah. Yeah. Just everything, the way it was executed with them just showing up, right?
Yeah.
Popping up in surprising Toro was great. And then I thought the actual sign language, that's great to know, but just it felt Star Wars-y. That great tip of the iceberg storytelling how long has Mando spent in these parts that he knows this? But then also, what is this, else does this imply about Mando that he understands their perspective?
Yeah.
Because how has he grown up
in a
small group of people trying to survive who are also probably hunted and misunderstood?
Yeah.
So that he has think about it, like some affinity for their perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing I'll say is I wish there was a little more sand on the Tusken Raiders. Outfits were a little clean for me, but the second time I went like, all right, I got to rewatch this episode, you know, for work type of thing. I was like, I can't wait for that sequence.
Yeah,
so that's how good it was for me.
Yeah, amazing, absolutely amazing. And I think it goes to a thing that a lot of people have been discussing online, which I really enjoy, and we'll talk about more, that I don't feel like this was a nostalgia trip. The only reason to be in Mos Eisley was to show us everything has changed.
Thank you. And I wouldn't expect you to think any other way. This is why we've worked so long and well together. I enjoyed every shot that was a wonderful homage.
Yeah.
But also... Yeah, that was going to be my favorite small thing was, first of all, when he's walking, you know, when you kind of figure he might be going to the cantina, and then you see the literal shot is with Grace, and it's just like, she's like, what? And I just was like, Wu-Hair? and then to see Wu-Hair's replaced by a droid, by the way. We don't serve their kind, and now they run. But
no
also
droid detector unit. We'll talk about that.
Wu-Hair being afraid of droid, having problems with droids, like all of that. I get why it's easy to be, if someone might say, I was just throwing nostalgia goggles on. I really think we got a great 5 years after the fall picture, and I was excited about that.
Yeah, it tied into the actual narrative of what was happening and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Another favorite thing for me was, and we've both mentioned it already, the Mando snark. I think maybe this is one of the reasons that Toro didn't bother me, because he was such a symbol of what the Mando doesn't respect and doesn't want to be, and how often all the great Mando snark of the those were brand new about the binox. They were.
They were.
No, I don't have Beskar. Nope.
Nope.
And my favorite is after they capture Fennec Shand.
Yeah.
And he says, why don't you go pick up your blaster? Which just totally has this implicit, you child, you lost your blaster.
I will say this. In this episode, the Mandalorian definitely represented me in dealing with Toro.
Why don't you go pick up your Zoom recorder you dropped, you young podcaster.
I felt seen by Mandalorian in this episode.
Did you have any other favorite big things or small things?
I definitely liked the big thing, I guess we'll put it here, of Pelly really just kind of like... not even questioning, just like, if you're going to be a father, you got to learn some things.
Yeah.
Because she saw it as what it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he's holding this thing captive. It was just like, oh, this is your kid. And it goes to this conversation that Ace has been having. He's like, pretty sure was Omira, Julia Jones last week, probably thinks Mandalorian is a Yoda species. Like, no one's going to be quiet. That's your kid. Oh, you must have ears under that helmet.
Or found family is just so accepted.
Or accepted, yeah.
Yeah, in a galaxy destroyed by wars for generations.
So I just, that was a big and small moment for me.
Yeah, that's a good one. I loved Baby Yoda's entrance, man. The just the waddling down the ramp, like, what's up?
Yeah.
What's everybody doing? You playing the licensed Han Solo card game?
Yes. There's a lot less Baby Yoda. Last week was like peak Baby Yoda. But yeah, everything about it is great.
Yeah, absolutely great. Well, let's move on. I think some of the things that we both probably liked fit under our canon effects and revelations tab. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the droids all up in the cantina. You touched on it, but... yeah, I was affected. I hooped and hollered as soon as Mos Eisley was mentioned because I was hoping that they'd go to Tatooine. And then even like the junk outside the cantina being the same. I was like, ooh. And as soon as that droid detection unit wasn't there, I was all in.
Yeah.
So did you take it that was straight up EV-99 out of a job? Or did you just take it as that was... a droid?
I took it as a droid. That's a great question. I mean, immediately it was kind of like EV-99, but that's interesting. I didn't really take it like that, but I now want that to be the case.
Yeah.
No, I did. I just,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you take in, obviously, big change, Ruher, the bartender, famously disliked droids, droid detection unit, the great story in From a Certain Point of View book where he is, like Mando, traumatized by droids from the Clone Wars. And the violence that the droids laid out on the galaxy. But the cantina is also pretty much empty.
Pretty much empty.
And there's no business to be had here because the New Republic has crushed the crime syndicates.
Yeah.
So all of that is this picture of change. Did you take it as change for the good or just sort of... I think I was affected by that reality of course, it's a good thing to stop crime syndicates.
Yeah.
They steal and kill.
Yeah.
Good job, New Republic.
Yeah.
But we knew from previous Star Wars that Mos Eisley and Mos Espa functioned on betting on the races, on this is a place for scum and villainy to hide. Yeah. So there's no economy here.
Yeah.
There's nothing here.
Yeah. I love that because it's... it's very realistically complicated. This is a real weird, as you're talking, I'm thinking this. A real close friend of my past from a small town in Idaho. And so, you know, Monsanto, not very popular among people for a lot of their kind of work. One time we watched a news report or something, and she just kind of whispered under her breath, like, that's literally what keeps my town, my hometown, going. And I don't really have a hometown anymore because it's going away. And so just, again, but she realizes why.
Yeah.
But like that. So what you just said is very, very, because the streets are empty. Everything's empty. Mos Eisley is just, it's not what it was.
Yeah.
And that's okay because the New Republic, and by the way, we've had some shots at the New Republic, you know, it's a joke. It's everything. We know 5 years in, they're probably still struggling to get, it's a good firm ground, but, it made me number one. I also think we're going to maybe get could we get a comic or something about them suppressing the crime syndicates and could there be something cool with that? I don't know. I just really liked it because there's no really right answer. But what you just said, this is good, but this might lead to some problems. Maybe you have to adapt and adjust. Maybe if you were friends with the Tusken Raiders, you all could work this out.
Yeah.
I just like that. And I like it not being clear.
Yeah.
Click
yeah.
that answer. Good
yeah.
Or bad.
And it ties so much, even not just to the New Republic, but, you know, Leia and our friends putting Jabba himself specifically out of business, right?
Hut slaying.
Yeah, some good old hut slaying sometimes means there's droids all up in your cantina. We talked a little bit about the New Republic crackdown on the crime syndicates. We also just kind of casually found out the name of the planet that the guild is operating on that we have been spending a lot of time on, yeah. Nevarro.
I didn't catch it the first time she says it. I thought she was like... Like Hector Navarro's in the show?
I think
like,
a lot of us in the pop culture talking realm are like, huh? You mean the Navarro system? Navarro's not a system. He's a man.
Yeah. but it was fun. The style of the last two episodes has definitely changed how we Mando's not in every scene. Mm-hmm. Still mostly is. So to me, it was great, though, to learn that as, well, he didn't learn it, but as he hears it. You know, I thought that was great.
Yeah, yeah. I did a pause because I thought, like, ooh, are we learning? Is that a moon of, you know, that was controlled by the Mandalorians that I don't remember? Yeah. Or we haven't heard about. And it took me a second to realize, oh, she's talking about the incident that we have all seen. Fennec Shand herself, we should probably talk about a little bit as a character, but also Shand is the last name of one of the Kanji Club members, Crookin Shand, I believe from the databank. Do you think that she is going to tie into the Kanji Club? Or is it just like a connection we can make if we want kind of thing?
I think it might be one of those connections. If we see it, we earned it and we got it. But it leads to my point of I really liked the character. I liked the design, the look, the feel. Ming-Na Wen gets your fight, everything. And I just was like, even if she's dead, I'm like, yeah. I'd love some material with her. That could maybe answer that question,
yeah.
Past or future. I thought she was. I just thought she was a really good character. It's fun, so yeah. It inspired that kind of headcanon stuff of will we get that answer? I want that answer.
Yeah, I wonder if she isn't going to portray because I think she kind of did in this episode a hunter, a bounty hunter who is content with that life in a way that the Mando maybe never was and certainly isn't now because. You know, her name is ringing out. Mando is very well aware of her. She has a ton of skills.
It is known.
But she also is capable of, you know, manipulating. And if Toro and what she is saying, she truly believes, which it's a little early to tell.
Yeah.
Is that her actual philosophy of like, this is how you're a good bounty hunter. You do whatever is best for you and your job. Mm. And if it changes, if you get a new target, if you have to do something underhanded. Whatever is best for you is how this job works. Mm. And that makes her a really interesting character to me.
Yeah, totally.
We'll come back to a little bit whether or not she's dead or not.
Yeah.
This is a thing that distracted me in the episode, and it's normally not a thing that I try not to get pedantic.
Okay.
But I got distracted by where was the pulse rifle.
Yeah, that came up a lot. It came up in our Force Center Discord. I was checking in. Okay. Our good friend Brian Ward brought it up, and he was like, hey, I'm normally not this guy. But hey, and yeah, it was hard to counsel myself on that.
Yeah, I had let it go.
It's huge,
and then the credits started with all those that awesome concept art, and him on the Dubek with the pulse rifle.
Yeah,
and it does just make you go because it feels. One of the things I liked about the episode is Mando was working hard to come up with clever solutions.
Yeah,
and it certainly feels like his pulse rifle could have helped out.
Yeah, and look, I get like you know that we've set that weapon up as pretty powerful.
People have commented on how awesome it is in show.
In show. It's also very a piece of good resources because you can use the scope for a lot of different ways. Like
you can listen with it. It's got you can put different cartridges into it that have different effects.
So, it's one of those things that, it doesn't bother me a lot. I'm not one of those like, why didn't type of people. Yeah. I don't think you are either. We as a brand really aren't. But I had that question a few times.
Yeah, I can just be like, it jammed or he needs to clean it up. But I did. This is how invested and distracted I got by it. After I finished watching the episode, I went back and watched the end of chapter 4. Like, did he leave it?
Oh, yeah.
On Sorgon? Or was there a shot of him putting it to the side at the beginning of this episode? Yeah. My only kind of counseling for myself right now is maybe he thought that is making him stand out or it's broken, or
does he not want to kill Fennec Shand? You know, does he knew that would have ended it? I don't know.
Yeah,
that can go down a lot of different paths too.
I think now is a good time to get into the big question this episode for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Is Fennec Shand dead, and who is the figure? Do you want to dive in?
We're doing it here.
Yeah, let's do it.
Boba Fett.
I
am all in on it, and I love a good conspiracy theory. I love a good wild speculation. It is fun, and a lot of times I think it's fun in a like silly way. Like, hey, I'm probably wrong. And I keep making this joke, but I use it to, you know, there's a good chance it's Moff Gideon.
Yep.
Good chance. I keep saying it's Laser Bill McBurwalker.
Okay.
And it's some direct connection to next week. I don't think it's Grief Cargo.
Oh, Bill Burr. Okay.
Bill Burr. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Blaster Shoulders.
Blaster Shoulders. I don't think it's Grief Karga, but, you know, he's alive. We know. Right. So.
Yeah.
Could be looking for Mando, but come on. The Spurs. It's really hard to ignore the Spur sound.
Yeah, the Spur is solid. So the suspects that I have seen on the internet, people sent us some shot by shot circles and diagrams and arrows saying that is absolutely the Mandalorian. It's just the Mando coming back for her. So I think that is a possibility. Certainly a possibility that's just a cool entrance for Moff Gideon, because it would tie them to the larger story.
Can we pause there?
Yeah, let's pause there.
I never thought for a second it was a Mandalorian, and now I'm like, oh, that might be the answer.
it might be.
So, I never thought about that, because I was just so like, it's got to be Boba Fett.
Well, of course you were, because the whole show was basically a tease for Boba Fett, right? Like, how close are they getting to the, you know, the carcass of the Sarlacc and all that? So it absolutely, by going out in that direction, by setting up, who was she meeting? She had a rendezvous in Mos Espa, and I don't think she meant a date. I think she was meeting somebody. So is that Moff Gideon? Is that Boba Fett? Of course, just to contain the screams of our listeners, we know that Cobb Vanth is in the mix.
Yeah, yeah. Even Chuck Wendig has been like, I'd love it. Probably not going to happen.
Probably not going to happen. Just for anybody who isn't caught up, real quick, Cobb Vanth is one of the side stories of the Aftermath trilogy, and it's not even said explicitly. It is implied to readers that it is Boba Fett's armor rescued from the Sarlacc. He takes it because he wants to be a Western-style marshal and bring order back to Tatooine. Yeah. So just that, like, sure, okay, a marshal riding around trying to keep the peace wearing Boba Fett's armor all makes sense. Until we take this real world step back and go a sub story of the sprawling Aftermath trilogy is going to be the main plot. And you have to explain to an entire audience of, yep, it looks like Boba Fett. I know you still don't even really truly understand Boba Fett himself as a character, but don't worry, it's not Boba Fett. It's a guy you've never met who's in,
it's in a novel.
Like a total of about what? 15 pages?
Maybe. Yeah.
20 pages, whatever, of a book.
Yeah.
So, got Cobb Vanth. I've also seen Cad Bane being thrown around because of the Spur noise.
Yeah, Cad Bane.
Yeah, so I think those are all of our possibilities.
Yeah.
But let's dive into Mando coming back, and then let's talk more about Boba Fett.
Yeah,
I think those are the compelling ones.
Yeah, because we all on moments in Force Center when we are more calm, cool, and collected about theories, you and I always say, but hey, what are the emotional themes that would make your theory work, right?
Yeah.
So I'm saying that back to myself. Because I'm just like, it's Boba Fett. Why? Because Boba Fett.
Because they went near where we last were aware of Boba Fett being. Yeah.
What's the emotional theme? Boba Fett. So yes, let's talk. Okay. Mandalorian.
So the Mandalorian himself coming back to me would be interesting, because it could be him going, I think she's too smart for that. I don't think she's dead.
Right.
And out of honor, maybe she's alive. And even if not, I'm not going to let her just sit there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to bury her, take her somewhere, whatever past relationship they may or may
Some
not
honor.
Have.
Okay.
They don't have a deep relationship, but he was certainly aware of her.
Yeah.
My wild out there theory, which I don't think is actually true, is that there was some sort of understanding between them. Mm-hmm. Because I thought I wasn't sure quite why he went to get the dude back.
Right.
And seemed to put a lot of trust that situation would work itself out.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately it did.
It did, but yeah.
But, you know, I wonder if there was a little like, hey, I captured her, which was the deal with the kid. Right. She'll get out of it some way, and then I'll demand my money from the kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that's true, because I think it's a little outside of the ballpark of the kind of storytelling they have been doing.
Right.
So I think it's more likely that he is, if it is the Mando, he is just coming back to check on her.
Yeah, and
or
there's...
bury her.
Yeah, bury her, honor, the idea of... Now, he's not there. He's not there when she talks about that rendezvous, right? It's just Toro. I'm trying to remember.
It's just Toro, because she's saying, I can still make my rendezvous in Mos Espa, which I love also that they pulled Mos Espa in.
Absolutely. I was like, if he has a clue or anything of that, maybe he is also curious as to why, but he might have to assume she's dead, or he's going to go confirm that.
Yeah.
And that has something, you know, what's the gain out of that? Again, it's more plot pointy than emotional themes here, but so his honor, but also let me figure this out.
His honor and maybe a lead, because he still hasn't really made a decision on what his big picture plan is that we, the audience, have been let in on.
Yeah.
If he has one. Mm-hmm. Also just not in the reality of the story, but I'm 99% sure I read an interview with Ming-Na Wen. I think that one with Bresnikan.
Mm-hmm.
That talked about her being in two episodes. And I think the character is going to be back. I also think the character is more than capable of baiting Bargain Basement Han Solo into shooting her.
Yeah.
That why she stays there for as long as she does.
Right.
Playing dead.
Playing dead.
I don't know. Or maybe she is wounded, but she's wearing some sort of armor that like, this will knock me out, but I'll live.
Yeah, I ain't feeling great, but as far as him coming back, I hadn't even entertained that thought.
Well, it's not constructed that way. It's constructed that, well, the ship takes off and it goes, even screen direction wise, I believe it goes to the other, you know, anyway. But Boba Fett. This is, and I say this with love, we are a community that grasps at straws.
Mm-hmm.
It's Snoke could be the stormtrooper who hit his head, because maybe that's where he got the scar, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
all true. But we're going back to where we last saw Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. It's also like this isn't just like Boba Fett showing up in the Cassian Andor series, he could canonically, but this is The Mandalorian. It's dealing with what it means to be a Mandalorian. There's this huge hanging question of what does it mean for Boba Fett to be or not be a Mandalorian in his own mind in that actual history. And this is the kind of stuff that Filoni has, you know, loved filling out in the Clone Wars Rebels.
And he Boba Fett was handled really well in Clone Wars, right?
Yeah.
There's some good stuff. There's the other clue for me is that line that Mandalorian says, she's no good to us dead.
Just saying a Boba Fett line.
So I was like, ha-ha. And at the end of the episode, I went, wait a minute. Has he spent time with Boba Fett? Has he trained under him at some point? Is that some catchphrase that Boba Fett says?
Yeah, Boba Fett pops up and says, that's my line.
Yeah, or did he hang around at one point after Empire Jedi and crawl out of the Sarlacc pit, hang out with Mandalorian and go, and then I said, he's no good to us dead. Like, with Filoni at the helm here for this particular episode, that suddenly became less of a throwaway line. Now, that might be because I got my tinfoil hat on and I'm just looking for everything, but that's where I went back first. Even if the Spurs, I'll say this, I'm aware of the Spurs, but I didn't grow up thinking Boba Fett had Spurs. You know, that's not my mind doesn't go there first and then start seeing it. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right, he does. My mind went back to she's no good to me dead. She's not good to us dead.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and that is it just a Boba Fett call-out, or, you know, is that a certain amount of honor, you know? Or just, hey, a job's going to pay more for Han alive.
Yeah.
Or was Boba Fett having some amount of Mandalorian honor in his bounty hunting?
Right.
Who knows? Who knows? But in terms of your question of what would it matter to the story or to the themes that was Boba Fett is, I think, the biggest connecting thread through all these chapters so far is a question of who is the Mandalorian? Who is he as a human? And what does that have to do with the idea of being a Mandalorian?
Yeah.
Is the armor strength or is he hiding his humanity behind it? And using Boba Fett as a mirror to those things, and using Boba Fett to help define different ideas of what it means to be a Mandalorian makes perfect sense.
There's a lot of area to play with in terms of themes, because we joked in the past, and I think it's pretty true, it is like Favreau wanted to make a Boba Fett series and was denied that. Part of it would be like, you know, well, hey, Boba Fett isn't Mandalorian, this and that, and Filoni's on board, you know, king of the modern canon Mandalorian stories. And
yeah.
At some point you would think, like, wouldn't it be fun to play with that?
Yeah.
Play with this thing of, you know, Jango and Boba Fett aren't, ?
Yeah.
Could we figure that out? And also, by the way, Mandalorian isn't what we thought of as a, quote, pure Mandalorian. He's a foundling. And it's like, so they introduce that, and it's like, suddenly it's very interesting. It is, like you just said, this weird mirror.
Yeah.
He isn't, but he's certainly living up the ideals, and that's why he's considered one, whereas Boba Fett, like his father before him, I'm stolen valor. I ain't what you are. So, yeah, some kind of, and it's not only verses, but some kind of having those two characters in these themes does make more sense than you think.
And there is also just, even if it is not Boba Fett, if it is Cobb Vanth or Cad Bane or a cool introduction from Moff Gideon or it's the Mando coming back, there is no way Dave Filoni constructed this episode. Mm-hmm. Dave Filoni of the I'm going to change my shirts midway through a convention to get people talking. There's no way he does not know the entire hardcore Star Wars fan base is going, Boba Fett, Boba Fett, Boba Fett, where? You know, there's no way he doesn't know what he's
probably
doing.
Walking around his house with a shirt on going, is that Boba Fett?
Is that Boba Fett?
Yeah.
All right. We move on to themes. We've already kind of touched on a lot of the themes, but I want to take a moment.
Yeah.
How effective for you was the idea of being a legend? Because that gets thrown around a lot. It seems like Fennec Shand is a legend in this world, and the Mando accords her that respect.
Yeah.
Being a Mandalorian at all is kind of legendary. Right. This particular Mando is building a legend of...
He's becoming,
Oh, man, he was a badass, and then he shot up the whole guild and ran away with a child. He's becoming infamous.
Yeah.
And then that idea that is entirely how Fennec Shand manipulates the kid. And the kid could just be smart and go, I don't care about being a legend. Right. I want to get paid and I want to get in the league. I'm going to, or the guild. I'm going to be practical. But he is just totally manipulated by this idea of his name ringing out.
Yeah, big theme that I love. I love that in the trailer, we saw Fennec Shand say that line, and we all were like, oh, she's talking to Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I love that. I was like, oh, nope, that wasn't her.
Your name will be legendary. And Toro Calican.
And I do love that that's how she gets him. And much like a lot of these myths will teach you, your obsessions with things can destroy you. Thrones and crowns and capes will destroy you. And then Mandalorian doesn't, I don't think he wants to be legendary. So that clear play off that.
Yeah.
Like you just said, he's kind of like, oh, boy, you know, thing.
It's a great conversation with...
You all know that? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great conversation, I think, with The Last Jedi, where I think Luke understood the dangers of being a myth or a legend.
Yeah.
And so he was resisting it, and he was shown sort of like, hey, people need the inspiration of a legend and the hope of a legend. And then this is like, hey, if that's all you want, that's where it's kind of crappy and would just lead you to getting unceremoniously shot.
Especially because we just saw the Mandalorian get offered this very unlegendary lifestyle.
Yeah.
Stick around the village, do some fishing for some blue fish, and raise your kid.
Yeah.
And he left, not because I felt he wanted to go pursue glory, but he just felt that very unlegendary life wasn't his. And so will he come back to that in any way?
Yeah.
Does he not want the name that he has now, you know, with her saying Navarro and everything? So, I think that will play going forward.
Yeah. I also thought there was just like a theme of being displaced. Like the Mando was trying to just kind of fall back into his old ways because he had to, but there are no jobs available because the scum of hive and villainy, the hive of, you know what I'm saying?
The business is done.
Yeah. Yeah. The wretched hive of scum and villainy is not hopping.
Not hopping.
And even Fennec Shand feeling like, okay, well, she used to be this kick-ass hunter, but she doesn't have anyone to work for, she was rendezvousing with somebody in Mos Espa for something. Mm-hmm. So it was just holed up in the hills shooting at whoever comes by, comes near her.
Yeah, being pursued, yeah.
It give this whole feeling of being displaced.
Yeah.
Of not knowing who you are, where you stand.
Normal routines, or even the bad ones, are mm-hmm. gone, done,
yeah.
vanished, taken away.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of taking things, we are going to take a break, and then we will be back to look at some of the other moments from Chapter 5 of The Mandalorian.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we have returned to finish our conversation about Chapter 5 of The Mandalorian. We are at the part where we normally chat about directorial choices and moments. Mm. Now, you were a little conflicted. Were there parts that that spoke to you, either in "Oh, I really like that," or there parts that you felt like, "Eh, this is what I'm not sure about in terms of directing choices."
There's just the way some of the shots were set up. There's one shot with I thought Toro was It wasn't like it was out of his eye line was wrong or anything kind of basic kind of stuff, but just the way some of the stuff was framed. And again, you have a director of photography working with you, but Tor was looking up really odd to me. And again, all that stuff, you know, characters supposed to look up. Just some of it looked really awkward to me. Some of those kind of things. But I'll choose to focus on what I loved here. I really liked the speeder bike flash sequence.
Yeah.
I thought that was really fun. Much like Bryce Dallas Howard giving us this dinosaur chase. That one was really fun. I like the subtle them kind of going in front of each other, macho, mano y mano. But then just her skills on display, but then Mando's skills on display of how to get around it. I thought that was a fun sequence.
Yeah. I think for me, the directing choice that stood out the most was I loved the speeder bike travel. The chase with the Flash was great, but it was a moment of seeing the speeder bikes in a different way. I liked how they made the jumps off the dunes.
Oh, yeah.
And it interacted with the environment in a different way. And just in terms of like giving you a sense of going back to that episode of the week of like, well, why wouldn't you want to see a Star Wars character do fun things? It's just like visually and aesthetically pleasing to watch these speeder bikes that we've seen in different environments. Yeah. Do cool leaps off sand dunes because that's the way they travel. Yeah. I also like some of the landscape shots that really evoked a lot of the kind of great cinematography we've seen on Tatooine before. So like when some time had passed and it was this nice long flat landscape shot of Toro kind of reclining on the speeder in Fennec as the suns were coming up.
Yeah, there was some great stuff.
I like that shot a lot. I also like the shot of Fennec lowering her helmet a little bit. It really reminded me of when Lando pulls his mask down just a little bit in Return of the Jedi.
That's right.
Because it has, obviously by then we know the character Lando, but this had a little bit of like, hey, we've been waiting for this actor and to see who this character really is. And it had a little bit of that sort of like celebration of the surprise of it's this character. Here we go.
Yeah.
Let's talk about action figure moments. Were there any moments that felt like they were inspired by action figures?
I mean, the fight sequence is okay. Like Ming-Na one was great. Like, I don't think criticism of the fight sequence, but it was okay for me. You know, I think her sniping was great. I think I'm trying to think specifically. it's probably funny enough. It might have been playing a licensed Han Solo card game with the Pitroids, because that would be something I'm more apt to do with my figures as a kid. I have a lot of downtime of Destro and Baroness just talking about their relationship as a kid. And so that one was, I actually, like, if you were to shoot, if our good friend Brian Ward was to do one of his figure videos or paintings, it would be Pitroids playing cards.
Yeah.
And I'll take that over the action in this one.
Yeah, that was great. And I suppose it's a good way to talk about a little bit of that half of the episode we haven't talked about as much is what's going on in the old, not docking bay, but Hangar 35, was it? Yeah. I liked that she seemed to have a sort of familial relationship with the pit droids.
Yes.
That it wasn't just ownership, that they were kind of her little brood, her family. And I liked that. Of course, they don't have money, so they're playing for like three gears. And a great way to set them up all just to see the big Baby Yoda entrance. But really connecting, like, there's a reason that she has some opinions on on how to rear a kid because she's raising three pit droids. the Mando with speeder bike, I just like that's probably going to be an action figure, right?
I mean, it should, right?
It really, really should.
Was he on the, was that the one from Shadows of Empire, of the Shadow of the Empire series?
I think so, yeah.
And the other one's more from Rebels, right? That era, it looked like to me. Yeah. Gotta get that. Swoop bike, whatever that is.
Yeah, they called it a speeder bike, but it looked swoopy. It looked like a swoop bike.
I apologize for not knowing all the Legends terms.
You know, since we're still close to directorial choices and talking about the speeder bikes, I did want to ask about one thing. The shots where Mando takes a shot on his Beskar, like the first couple, it seems like, oh, well, she pinged him, you know, and he's running. There's that last shot once she has destroyed the speeder bike and he is just standing there.
Yeah.
And she hits him in the chest. How did you interpret that choice? Did you interpret it as the Mando was allowing himself to be a target so Toro could get around? or was it just he was just standing up and the shot was kind of awkward and she got the directing shot was kind of awkward, so she got a space laser shot.
I think
on
I'm going to say it was a director, an awkward choice, real world directing choice that is easy to go what you just said, because it made me pause too. Like he knows what's coming, right? He just been whacked two times rolling in the sand, getting hit by this thing. So yeah, I think it was awkward, but I'll take it as a distraction, because he also then kind of
goes up the other side. Yeah,
says, hey, nice distraction.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll take it as that.
Yeah.
Would you in the same boat?
I think the shot definitely stood out to me. Yeah. So there's a part of me who's like, I like to interpret it as like,
yeah,
she's far away. I think my armor can take it, because that's adds to the legend of the armor and the storytelling about it. So I like the idea that he would stand up and go like, I can take that.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that almost would be like, if that is the choice, let's make it clear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Making it clear. Going back to action figure moments, I think now I do want a Razor Crest with expanding rocket fins.
Yes.
Because now it's demonstrated something cool it can do. You need to fill up the back of that box with all the different things that it's got the carbon freezing chamber. You can steal the panel off the side like the Jawas did.
That would be a great set.
A great set. And then the other, this isn't an action figure inspired moment. It's just something I want. I want Dubek with exclusive dead bounty hunter. Just an action figure of the dead bounty hunter you can drag along.
Yeah.
and I will also, again, throw out there, I think its impact was a little bit lost because we had already seen it in promotional stuff, but the classic shot of the stormtrooper on Dubek, but with Mando, was really cool.
Some of them are just exactly what we've seen in New Hope. Like, I take it exactly what it is. You are paying homage to what came before and why we're all here. And that was part of the fun little thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to move on to best grizzled weirdo moment.
Mm-hmm.
What spoke to you in terms of grizzled weirdos?
I mean, a little bit of that Mandalorian and open reactions, but I'll go to Pelly. Amy Sedaris just get her initial, Hey, she's there. That's her job. Some people have come and gone. The promised credits, they don't get it. She's stuck with these pit droids. She probably gets a drink at Chalmers on the way home and just has this life. And also, by the way, I imagine she's been there through the events of New Hope. And who knows? Maybe remembers when some young kid won a pod race. Like she's been around for a little bit. And I did in the end really like the character, like the character all the way through. But it is one of the situations where you're like, I'm such a fan of that person, and you told that great story too. But just like, I in the 90s watched a lot of Strangers with Candy and Stephen Colbert and everyone on that sketch show. Just kind of a sketch like sitcom. So I just liked everything about her, even though sometimes it played different than what Tora was doing, everything. But that introduction was great to me.
Grizzled. Yeah, I think she is the MVP grizzled weirdo outside of Mando's great snark lines. And we should say, I think probably because we have talked about it, that the representation of women has been better in these last couple episodes. And there's been
four or five.
Her casting was honestly one of the things that I really wanted to see, because we know that we've got some fighters, right?
Yeah.
We got Cara Dune, now we have Fennec Shand, and hopefully they will both be back. But I wanted to see some of this. I mean, just the side characters with flavor who are not fighters, having that spread around, because we've been introduced to so many great grizzled weirdos played by men in the first half of the season. So it was great to see Amy Sedaris getting to have some fun.
Definitely.
I kind of took it at the beginning that the ship was messed up, but her go-to thing is immediately upsell how damaged it is.
Sure.
Like that line of like, oh, I'm gonna have to rotate, that really cracked me up, because it was so ambiguous.
Yeah,
it was like you're making that sound like it's a lot of work to rotate whatever it was you were looking at on the outside of the ship.
Little car mechanic action. Yeah. You got a lot of carbon scoring. I'm totally there with that.
That was great. I think my favorite line, strangely, from her was what should we feed him? I don't know, something with bones in it.
Yeah. Yes.
Because so far he's had bone broth. And devoured an entire frog with bones in it. So there's like, how do you know that you're spot on?
That's what
the audience see the baby Yoda eat.
Yeah, she clearly doesn't know the species because she says it, but she's enough to know. Like, I've seen a few of these come through, a few aliens come through.
Yeah. when I was I got a chance to talk with Alex and Molly Damon of Star Wars Explained about this episode, and it came up with them about Mando. Was it honorable that Mando just took the money off the dead body and paid her? Like, it was certainly honorable that she didn't mm-hmm. expect to get paid, and I think it was a nice little arc that once she... she calls him a womp rat at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, he's one of those.
Womp rat.
And then she realizes, no, he's a father with some mm-hmm. learning to do, not as stupid as he looks, as she says yep. to him, and clearly has a better appraisal of who he is yeah. as a human. And for her, it seems like she's going to be like, fine, I repaired your ship for nothing. I'm sure you didn't get paid.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any energy like, I'm going to put, you know, a clamp on your ship. It's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Hey, so be it.
She's going to do it, yeah.
You're a good guy with a kid trying to get by in the galaxy, fine. And it's mm-hmm. a pleasant surprise that she gets paid.
Yeah.
So I like that.
It was effective, and it shows him, just another example of his approach, his point of view, yeah.
Yeah.
And but Tor don't deserve that money.
Do you think it was honorable for him to yeah. just, yeah.
Yeah. No, he doesn't even keep any for himself.
Yeah. No, he doesn't. And yeah. I my argument was he did... what he said he was going to do. He mm-hmm. helped him capture her alive.
Yeah.
And then Toro made his own bad choices.
Yes. Yeah.
Did it also, were you worried about Baby Yoda when he shot Toro?
Oh yes. And you know, I always watched the first episode with Grace, and if you hurt cute things in front of her, she gets really upset. And we both had that moment, the way it was, I won't say the way it was shot bad, but just like you have this like, where'd it go? And then the next day, Grace and her sister watched it, and her sister started screaming, you better not do anything the moment Toro comes out with a gun to his head. And then when it falls, she was really upset, which again is just the power of Star Wars and just entertainment in general. When you can get sucked in so much that on a Friday afternoon at 2, you're like, no!
Don't hurt the puppet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, we definitely, our house, we were worried.
Understandable. Yeah. All right. As we begin to wrap up here, let's talk about predictions for next week.
Fade in. Boba Fett's hanging around with Fennec Shand. You would post a great question of last week of, hey, are we going to see him struggling to get off the planet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. essentially we did. We saw him being chased. We know, so there's problems. So I'm going to follow your lead. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think he has to fully know at this point, mm-hmm. I can't take two steps without having everyone come down on me.
Mm-hmm.
So how is he going to handle that? I feel like, given the synopsis that we've seen for next week,
mm-hmm.
I feel like he's still not going to have a big picture plan
mm-hmm.
and is going to turn to someone he has known in the past. For help. Sanctuary Part 2? Or is it like... to go to like even Breaking Bad when you're like, hey, I'll go to a fixer who will hide me.
Right.
And I'm going to go do a job for somebody so that they can take me to the most secluded place in the galaxy. Not Octo.
Right. Right.
But what they believe is the most secluded place in the galaxy.
Yeah. I like that idea. I like the idea of help. Help's going to go wrong. We're going to assume that at this point. And that like his end game is still right now safety for this creature.
It's got to be, right? Because that's what's in front of him. He is just like, not who do I want to be, not how am I going to get by, of just like, where can I stop this thing from being killed?
Yeah, because he's not trying to solve the mystery of what they were trying to do with him. He's not going to, he doesn't want to confront anybody. He's trying to run. And I could take one more week of that, but now this is really, something's got to change.
And I wonder if that might be the tension of the episode of, nice try,
yeah.
You can't hide, you have to face this head on.
Yeah.
Or his hand is going to be forced by Moff Gideon just catching up with him.
Catching up to him.
Yeah. So I hope maybe Moff Gideon next week, because otherwise we're looking at another episode of the week,
if you will,
and then the final two episodes back to the story of Baby Yoda and the Imperial Warlord's desire for him that we were introduced to in the first couple episodes. I think that there's also the possibility that since it was really raised as a question this week, that Mando might face a little bit more specifically, what does it mean to be a caregiver? Because, hey, tried to drop him off on a peaceful planet, but he's being hunted. I tried to just function by leaving a baby in a hot ship, and I got called out for it.
Yeah.
And he's this little MF-er is never going to stay. He's always going to be on my side. So maybe there'll be sort of some thematic of like, how am I that? How am I a caregiver? Because that's what I am now.
Yeah.
I don't know how to be that. I don't want to be that, but I have to be. So how do I do that?
Single parent.
Yeah.
In the galaxy. Yeah. Trying to make ends meet.
That is my prediction, is that Mando's going to get a pamphlet at a support group on how to be a single parent in the galaxy.
Yeah.
But yeah, soon Mando's going to need to make a plan, or his hand's going to be forced. Yeah. We are going to wrap up. Unless you have any other thoughts.
No.
All right, let's do it. Let's wrap up with a weird, fun, personal question inspired by the episode. If you, Ken, were babysitting Baby Yoda, what would you feed him?
Dry food. Look, I'm trying to use an example of dogs. Like, our dogs right now are dry food dogs, and then I sneak them whatever human food I'm eating. I'm bad. But, like, growing up as a kid, when my mom got the wet food for the dogs, the Alpo, I would gag, and I can't do it. So if Baby Yoda needed a frog, I'd be like, have you tried these little breadsticks that Luke had on Dagobah that your Uncle Yoda seemed to like?
Okay. Your Uncle Yoda.
Yeah, that would be
interesting. I was going with the more real world.
Yeah.
So I'd make a frozen pizza just to see if he liked it.
Sure, that's a good starting point for you.
But in general, like he's pretty hard meat eater so far. I would say he's swallowing a frog whole and sipping on that bone broth. Mm. So I think I would try to buy him an Impossible Burger at a local restaurant here in Los Angeles and see
what he likes.
Yeah, see if he likes it.
Yeah,
and if he's like, you know, looks up at me like, why isn't there a bone in this? Stick a bone in Impossible Burger for him.
Yeah, in terms of real world food, I mean, if I want to hang out and grab a snack with a friend, it's frozen yogurt. So maybe we'll come on, Baby Yoda. Here's a sample cup. Can you see Baby Yoda wandering around a Menchie's?
Oh, my
or
God.
Or Yogurt Land?
That meme, but with Frogurt. It's happening. Hey, it's even got frog in the title. It is perfect. Frozen ice cream made out of a frog for Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
I think we cracked what's going to happen next week.
There we go. Bone broth, frozen yogurt flavor.
There we go. We did it. We wrestled wrestled with an episode, a chapter that a lot of different people are having a lot of different perspectives on, what we loved about it, what we questioned about it, and got to think about Baby Yoda's diet. We have spoken.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.